Welcome to Copper Country Today, heard Sunday mornings at 7 o'clock on 97.7 The Wolf, 8 o'clock on AM 1400 WCCY, and also our new WCCY translator, 99.3, and 9 o'clock on KBAR 102.3. Our program brought to you in part by the members of the Copper Country Education Association and by the Copper Country Veterinary Clinic, providing the highest quality in medical care to help their patients live longer, healthier lives. You can also listen to a podcast of our programs by going to the Copper Country Today page at QNRReport.com. In the second part of the program this morning, I'll be talking with Cheryl Farner. Cheryl is the new executive director of the Keweenaw Peninsula Chamber of Commerce. In the first segment, we get to meet Christopher Germain. He is the Democratic candidate for the 38th District Michigan State Senate seat, the seat that is currently held by Republican Tom Casperson. Chris, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on. Good morning.
So what is Tom Casperson doing wrong that you think you need to replace him? It's kind of an open-ended question I thought I'd start with there.
Yeah, very much so.
Seriously, why are you running?
Well, I decided to run just because I'm so heavily involved in my community. I've been part of the Delta County JCs, the Ford River Fire Department, which is just outside of Escanaba. I'm involved in the real estate industry. I'm the president of the Upper Peninsula Association of Realtors, and that's given me really a firsthand look at how businesses are working across our district and what people are looking for when they're moving into our district. I saw this as kind of a next step of community service, to be able to help the people in my district and in the Upper Peninsula where I grew up and I've always lived, just a chance to give back, because I believe if you have that seat, you are able to make a very vital impact on the Upper Peninsula through political feet.
Obviously, though, you would feel that there are some differences that would set you apart from Senator Casperson. Before we get into some of the specific issues that we'll be talking about, what is your general philosophy in terms of what state government should be doing?
Well, right now there's a couple key issues that I've been talking about at every stop. And, of course, there's a bunch of different issues. We're not going to get into all of them today. But right now, we have the education system, which is in disrepair. We are not rated very high in Michigan for our education system, and the education funding has been gutted. And that, education is a very basic part of our economic standing. We have to have an educated populace in order to attract jobs here to Michigan. I also want to see vocational education fully funded and added into the school system. Michigan has made a few steps towards vocational education, but there's a lot more that we need to do. And I believe that students, if they can get that hands-on experience right at the high school level, that's going to put us in a lot better position to attract business here, because we're going to have not only a highly educated group of students coming out of the high school level, but also those that have hands-on experience and real-world experience for jobs in building trades and mechanics and those type of industries. So I think that will make us really competitive educational-wise. The other big issue that we've been talking about, because it affects so many people in the district, is the senior pension tax. This tax has taken $355 million out of the pockets of people who are collecting pensions that they get more than $20,000 a year. They're being taxed on that, and that's hurting our economy as well, and also hurting the senior citizens that are trying to make basic living needs, like paying for their heat and those type of things. I do not see that that tax as justified. It's certainly not moral to be charging our senior citizens that, so I want to see that reversed as well. Those have been a couple of the huge issues that we've been talking about as we go around the district.
Let's start with that one, and then we'll work backwards while it's top of mind here. Michigan was the 50th and final state in the nation to pass a tax like that on seniors, on the retirement income, on pensions and such. Why should we go back to being the only state in the nation that allows that pension money to be tax-free?
Well, the tax would have been a little bit different if they would have come to people in my demographic and saying, by the time you retire, we're going to start taxing your pension. That would have been different because I would have had time to prepare for that, and I could plan for that in my financial future and in my retirement investments and those type of things. But what Michigan had done is just past it, where all of a sudden everybody was being taxed. Some of those people very much were told when they were receiving their pensions that they weren't going to be taxed on it, because that was the belief at the time. So they were earning a pension and planning on utilizing that entire amount when they retired, and now with this new tax, that's hurt a lot of people in that regard. So I guess it's kind of a twofold thing. You know, if we told future generations that absolutely we're going to tax their pension, then we might be able to do that, and that would be a little bit more justified than going back to people that were already collecting it and starting to tax them.
So if you roll the tax back to where we were 5 years ago or thereabouts, the money that will be lost from the state revenue stream, what programs would you cut to make up for that, or where would you increase taxes to make up for that?
Well, what we've looked at right now is we gave a $1.8 billion unrestricted tax cut to corporations, and then in order to replace that, we eliminated the heating credits that you got, the homestead tax credits that you got when you were filing your taxes, the earned income tax credit we eliminated, then we added that pension tax and increased taxes a little bit on middle-class families. So what I would like to see is a little bit more of a reasonable approach to it. I would like to see the tax cuts that we gave corporations be restricted. That way they're required to provide some kind of new employment to the state of Michigan, so we're hiring more people. And that's more people that are going to be paying into the tax system in Michigan, so of course more revenue for the state there.
In other words, you would punish businesses that are not hiring?
No, I would say that we would need to leave their taxes alone, especially small business. We need to actually kind of roll back some of the taxes that we placed on small business, but not so much punishing them because they haven't received tax credits in the past and they weathered fine. What happened is we gave an unrestricted tax cut. Every governor, whether it had been Republican or Democrat before this, had made sure that they were restricted, that they had to provide some kind of new employment in order to get these big tax breaks. So instead of balancing that on the back of the senior citizens, and we made those restricted, between the two, I think we could come to a reasonable approach where everybody's kind of happy. We can't certainly put all the burden on business, but we certainly can't put all the burden on senior citizens and middle-class families either.
Should that tax on the senior pensions be left in place for seniors who have a certain amount of assets or have a certain amount of other income?
It's certainly something that could be looked at. You know, we would have to have all stakeholders at the table look at what a reasonable approach would be without putting Michigan into a compromised position. But right now, when you have people in the district that are having trouble meeting heating costs and meeting everyday needs, that does put us in a bad position all the way around.
Let's hit on education, talking with the gentleman who would like to replace Tom Casperson in the 38th District Michigan State Senate seat, Christopher Germain, Democrat from Escanaba. Let's talk a little bit about, you mentioned it, education. The Democratic line through this election campaign has been that Governor Rick Snyder gutted education. The Republican line has been, and this is the line that was recently supported by the Detroit Free Press after investigating it, is that every year that he has been in office, funding for education has increased. Has it increased or has it decreased?
A little of both, actually. what happened is initially there was $2 billion that was taken out of the education system. Some of that has been replaced. We've replaced about $1 billion worth of that. And then also some has been put into for-profit charter schools. And there's a difference between regular charter schools and for-profit charter schools as well. Here, just outside of my county, the Hannaville Indian community has a charter school. And the purpose for that would be they can teach cultural type things and cultural language, which you couldn't do in a standard school. So there certainly is a need for charter schools, but when you have ones that are strictly for-profit and they're not as regulated, that's where we run into a problem. So some of that education money did go into that, and some of the money that was initially cut out was placed back into the system slowly. So it's been kind of increasing a little bit as we go along. We know that very recently there was almost $1 billion added to education. We're still right now about $470 short per pupil than where we were before. So part of that I would like to see replaced, of course, to get a little bit more money into that education system, but then again, also starting to fund vocational education. If you look at when I went through high school, right here at our local ISD, we could do a building trades class. The students would actually go out, physically build a house, and then we would sell it. Well, when the market crashed for real estate, that made it very difficult for that program to stay funded because the sale of the house ultimately funded the class. So if we could help support that as a state, you know, of course, maybe not on that big of a scale because, you know, we don't want a school holding a bunch of housing real estate across the district or anything, but if we can help fund those type of hands-on experiences, I think that would be a great part to invest into when we're looking at the education system.
When the state's budget was in crisis 4 years ago and the educational funding was changed, and you're right, per pupil student certainly was cut at that point, what specific taxes would you have raised or what other programs would you have cut to keep that funding in place?
You know, when we look at the funding across the board, we always say that you need to look at the large picture. You know, and this is with any organization. As the president of the UP Association of Realtors, we've had to make those decisions too. Everybody was hit pretty hard, from governments down to businesses down to individuals. And everybody kind of had to restructure what they were doing. But if you look at it across the board, there are departments that still overlap services. If we could get those departments to be a little bit more streamlined, that could be some savings there. You know, of course, we do have departments that are underfunded, too, such as, you know, being a firefighter, the Bureau of Firefighter Services only has about 3 employees to cover the entire state. My local rep here that I work with covers 52 counties. You know, so there's some departments that could probably use a little bit of extra funding, such as that group, but there's some that overlap those services. We can have some savings there as technology updates, and we're able to provide a more streamlined service that could be some savings there. So when you're looking at it, there's a lot of different things that we could do. Sometimes we need to think a little bit out of the box of the typical budget line, you know, like if we put this here, we have to cut this here. We need to look at some long-term goals, which sometimes, unfortunately, does require a little bit more revenue to invest in those technologies that are going to make it cheaper in the long run. So it's really a multifaceted approach that you can take when you're looking at those budgets and how you're going to handle them.
But short-term, 4 years ago when this was going on, what would you have sacrificed? Immediately to save that year school funding?
Sometimes the school funding, you know, I mean, like, if there was not so drastic cuts, it might have been okay to temporarily cut. But when you're looking at it across the board, I think everybody kind of had to give a little. Around that time, or 2 years ago, when we got further along, is when we gave the $1.8 billion away to the corporations, which ultimately didn't really create a whole lot of new jobs. We didn't have to give quite that much away. We wouldn't have had to cut quite as much out of education. You know, when you're looking at it, if we could have shared that sacrifice across the board instead of just picking certain departments to ultimately take on a lot of that, that would have been a better approach.
Let's talk about job creation then for a few minutes here. Christopher Germain is my guest. He's the Democratic candidate for the 38th District Michigan State Senate seat. The tax cuts for business were affected, at least ostensibly, as job creation incentives. How long should it take for those cuts to take effect?
You know, it really varies. When if we're looking at just giving an unrestricted tax cut like that, it could take a while. You know, there's no incentive really for anybody to hire anybody else. And if they were functioning just fine without the tax break, they probably aren't going to need to hire extra staff. Where if we incentivize those, we see a more immediate result right away because we're giving direct money for a direct result. And again, too, with small businesses, they need more of a tax cut. The mom-and-pop businesses sometimes are left behind in the grand scheme of things. We need to foster our small businesses by making the appropriate tax breaks and access to better tools for them to be able to survive. And really, if you look at the UP marketplace, we have a ton of mom-and-pop businesses. You know, we really need to make sure that we're helping them out, fostering them along, and seeing what resources they really need from the state.
And yet,
it's not going to create 100 jobs at a time, but it certainly will sustain our communities and possibly add some employment in the long run as those businesses are able to expand.
And I'll play devil's advocate here. You talked a few minutes ago about looking at the larger picture of things, and sometimes you can't get things done right away. Are you better off doing what we've been doing over the last 20 to 30 years and trying to spot tax breaks for businesses as teasers to get them in? Or are we better off, I mean, Michigan, and this goes as I research and read about this, 4 or 5 years ago, Michigan's business climate was among the worst in the nation. Now we are kind of midpoint, which at least makes us competitive. Are we better off trying the slow approach to making business easier to do in Michigan and hoping that 10 years, 15 years, 20 years from now, we'll see the kind of benefit that would be only fleeting if we used incentives that would be good for the short term but won't hold for the long term?
Right. And if we take both approaches, if you do a little bit of both, instead of investing $1.8 billion all in one basket, if we would have done a little bit to start incentivizing that short-term growth and then making plans in place for the long-term growth, that would be a better strategy of going about it. We've seen both sides of the aisle. We know that neither have been overly successful when we focus just on the short-term or just on the long-term, but if we're focusing on both, and we make sure that we're trying to make a sustainable Michigan for everybody down the road, that's what we need to do. And we certainly haven't seen a whole lot of job growth here in the Upper Peninsula, specifically for this district. When you look at Michigan as a whole, certainly certain things have gotten better. Being in the real estate industry, we've seen that. The housing market is starting to face a little bit of a better direction statewide. We've seen some business growth. But overall, we're still kind of sluggish. You know, we went from number 3 for the highest unemployment to number 4. So there's a little bit of positive action there, but we're still number 4, you know, for the highest unemployment in the nation. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done. And we know that over the last 4 years, these specific policies of just trying to push it from the top down without incentivizing anything hasn't really been working as well as it should.
Everybody seems to agree that Michigan's infrastructure needs investment, roads and bridges in particular. Where should that money come from?
They've been looking at a lot of different structures. People have been looking at adding the gas tax. I did come out against the gas tax itself for the moment until there's a little bit more money in people's pockets, especially in this district. Trying to think of it from this district first and then Michigan as a whole. People in this district, if we're adding an extra 20 to 40 cents a gallon, that could hurt. You know, that could hurt a lot of people. There's some people that are very much living paycheck to paycheck right now, going to the gas pump with only $10 in their pocket. And if we're adding another 20 to 40 cents, that's certainly going to make an impact. Kind of some of the things that we had talked about before, too, you know, like if we can get government to streamline their services, we certainly could get some savings there. One of the big things, too, is once we come up with funding, staying ahead of the infrastructure projects. What we're seeing right now is we've kind of waited until they've become problems, where if we would have stayed ahead of them, you know, every dollar that we spend in infrastructure will save us $7 in the long run once it's become problematic and absolutely needs to be repaired.
Should we go into debt to fix those problems? Are we looking at a massive bonding issue or something like that?
Right now, you know, I mean, we would have to sit down and really take a look at the budget to see where that money is going to come from. They've had an opportunity over the summer to really work on road funding, and they just haven't taken that opportunity to do that. Senate has not been in session very much at all over the summer. They've gone down for one day of work and then left for another month-long vacation. So we can see right now that they're certainly not tackling that issue, but it's going to have to be something that certainly needs to be looked at. We're lacking well into over $1 billion and close to $2 billion in a lack of infrastructure dollars. It's going to be something that has to be seriously looked at, and, I'm not sitting at the table. I don't know what they're looking at cutting at this point, because I'm not involved in that process, but I do know the gas tax was one of the things, and also they had looked at some sales tax or tax on services and those type of things. So, again, there might be an approach that we can take that maybe we'll spread it across the board and not just put it on the backs of one demographic or the other, where we can certainly come up with a reasonable solution to get those things taken care of. But in the future, they certainly need to look at staying ahead of those infrastructure projects instead of waiting 4 years, when it becomes a problem, and then trying to decide what to do at the last minute. And now, really, this fiscal year, of course, is coming to an end, and we still don't have a solution as far as road funding goes. They've had months and have just sat there and not taken up the issue.
Coming down to the last couple of minutes of the program here, talking with Chris Germain, the Democratic candidate for the 38th District Michigan State Senate seat. Tom Casperson, your opponent and the incumbent, has been an outspoken proponent of the wolf hunt. This one won't go away. We keep talking about it. Where do you stand on the wolf hunt issue?
I was fine with the current system that we had, where it limited the number of hunts. If you look here in our own backyards in Delta County, even just recently here, the news stories keep running where the wolves are being problematic. If we were limiting the number of hunts and we allowed it to control the population, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. The state, they did work on that issue a little bit when they were down there. I believe it passed. So we do have a ballot initiative up here, but basically that ballot initiative at this point really doesn't matter, because there was a law passed about the wolf hunt. Now, this year they're not doing a hunt, which I thought was a little bit bizarre, because they had the system in place. But the last system that we had, where they limited the number of hunts and you were able to hunt, I was okay with that system.
Well, no, the reason that they haven't scheduled it this year is because if the two ballot issues that are standing on the November ballot pass, they may or may not be able to hold it. If they don't pass, then they can hold it. But there was basically what the DNR said was they did not have enough time to set up the hunt once they actually knew they could do one. So that's why they canceled it for this year. If those two ballot issues fail in November, then there will be one next year. If they pass in November, then we're probably winding up in court on all of this. And one last question for you. One last question for you, Chris, because you're a realtor. You understand, you've learned about the Elliott Larson Civil Rights Act in Michigan. That's part of your 4 hours of required training when you get your license. I taught it, so I know. Should sexual identity be added as a protection in the Elliott Larson Civil Rights Act?
As we look at it right now, even within the realtor community, it seems like an overwhelming yes on that. And the reason being, right now as it stands, somebody could discriminate on housing due to sexual orientation. And it's just become an issue that, at this point, we don't know of any cases directly, especially within our association here in the Upper Peninsula, where somebody has been discriminated against because of sexual orientation. But there is the possibility that it could happen, because it legally is allowed unless Elliott Larson is amended. So I would support an amendment to Elliott Larson to add in sexual orientation as a clause that you can't discriminate against them for housing.
All right, Chris Germain, my guest on the first segment of Copper Country Today. He is the candidate who would like to replace Republican Tom Casperson in the 38th District Michigan State Senate seat. People want to find out more about you, Chris. Do you have a website? Do you have online resources that they can access?
Absolutely. The website is just votegermain.com. And my name does not have an E on the end, so it's just VOTEGERMAIN. GERMAIN.com, or you can go to facebook.com/votegermaine. Either one of those will have information on there and ways to contact me if you have specific questions on any of the issues that might be important to you.
I appreciate your time, Chris. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, Todd.
And coming up in the second portion of our program, Cheryl Farner, the new executive director of the Keweenaw Peninsula Chamber of Commerce. Copper Country Today continues in just a moment.